right, it's 37 minutes after the hour. So glad you're listening to us this morning. I hope your day is going well. We're glad you joined us. Bill Arnold here. I'm talking on the studio line. I'd like to bring him onto the program, Dr. Jerry Root. He is the professor of evangelism at Wheaton College. And Jerry, I have to be honest, the other day I was doing some moving, and I opened up this box of books, and here's The Quotable Lewis by C.S. Lewis, and the editors were Wayne Martindale and Jerry Root. And I thought to myself, oh, I wish Jerry was here to help me move this sofa.
Yeah, thank you very much. It's good to be with you again, Bill, and I'm glad I wasn't with you that day.
I'm sure you weren't, but I thought, hey, I know Jerry, kind of. You know, we're not personal friends yet, but I think we will be, because I love your topic more than ever, because I love evangelism. And you say in an article in Christianity Today, cease squirming and know that I am God, why we don't share the gospel.
Yeah, I think many people are afraid. It's one of the reasons, and they don't need to be. Perfect love casts out fear. If we rest in the love of God, it seems to us that we begin to pour out of us to others. And also, if I'm more afraid of what another person thinks of me, I've maybe drifted towards a kind of idolatry where I make what they think of me more important than what God thinks of me, who loves me. Doesn't mean I shouldn't be concerned that I don't come across obnoxious. I should be concerned what they think about me on that level. But I need to be motivated intrinsically by an overwhelming sense of God's love.
Jerry, that's gold. Right now we could stop the interview and I feel like I've had my money's worth.
Blessings on you. Then go do it. That's great.
But let's carry on some more. Now, first I want to ask you, where do we go wrong sharing our faith?
Well, I think maybe we go wrong by thinking, one, we need to increase the roles of the church or bring in more giving units to the church. The issue is not that. The issue is people need to know they're loved by God, that there's a thing called forgiveness. And if anybody's honest about their life, they know they long to be unconditionally. And human love is great as far as it goes, but none of us have ever loved anybody perfectly. So we know that we've probably never been loved perfectly, but we long to be loved like that. Plus, anybody who's lived honest life knows they're messed up. And we long to know we could be forgiven and that things could be set right. And I think that we're motivated by the wrong thing. We forget that people fundamentally would want to know they're loved by God. Mm-hmm. And they may be attaching their longing to the wrong object. If I make more money, if I have more sex, if I do this or do that or accomplish this or become famous, that's going to do it for me. It will never do it for them.
Mm-hmm.
You need to that longing to attach that desire to the wrong object tells me that people have a spiritual hunger. I just need to tap into that and let them know there's hope for them. God loves them and forgives them.
Yeah, Jerry, what about when people have reluctance because they fear they're going to get that gotcha moment where they're going to ask that question? They go, oh, now they're getting me. They're trying to get me with that, and they're trying to write me off instantly.
They should be grateful for the gotcha moment because maybe the gotcha moment reveals there's something they don't yet know, and they could say to that person, you know what, that is a good point, and I don't know the answer to that, but it's important, obviously, to you, or you wouldn't be asking the question. Let me go dig around for a week or so, and let me get back to you next Tuesday. I'll take you to lunch. And you go right back into the conversation, but you come back having learned a little bit, having grown a little bit yourself, and you've got more to offer. We should never be afraid of the gotcha moment.
Okay, that's really good advice. Now, when it comes to getting ourselves more involved in evangelism, it's okay to, you know, have some obstacles in the way. It's okay to have some failures. I mean, you say that nobody's ever really ready to have children.
If you
waited until you were ready, you'd never have them. I think of parents with toddlers. I think of parents with toddlers when they got that little, you know, diaper on, and then they're trying to walk and they fall. The parents go, oh, fall down and go boom. You know, the parents aren't scared. They're just going, let's get them up and get them walking again. I think God looks at us sometimes and says, oh, fall down, go boom.
we're the ones that are awkward. But if you're not awkward someplace in your life, you're just not growing.
Right.
So it's okay. It's okay to discover new things. It's even okay to discover the person who's hostile towards Christianity because somebody has hurt them in the past. I can say to that person, when I hear what you've just told me, it breaks my heart. I'm a Christian. Will you let me stand as a surrogate in the place of the one who hurt you and ask your forgiveness? because I wouldn't want anything to keep you from seeing how deeply you're loved by God and how great is his forgiveness. And I don't think there's anything that has to be off-putting for the person who's seeking to root what they do in the love of God to them and the love of God flowing through them to others.
So maybe all of us have had occasions where we've witnessed somebody sharing the gospel abusively and not in love. And that's given us, we've had a check in our spirit, like, oh, I don't want to be that person.
Well, if Matthew 18 is true, and I believe it is, then we should go to that person and talk with them. We never want to put a wet blanket on a person's passion to share the gospel. But like all things, a wild horse needs to be reined in on occasion. The horse has passion. We rein it in, and we can control it a little bit. Then its passion can be properly directed. And I think we can do that with others just by appealing to their desire to share the gospel. It appears to me clearly you want to share the gospel with others. Wouldn't you like to be as effective as you can? And let me add some points of view that maybe it would be good for you to consider so that you can become more effective than you are now. There's nothing that needs to shake us on this mission that Christ has given us. As Ed Stetzer, the director of the Billy Graham Center here, says, Jesus' last command should be our greatest concern. And I think he's right.
Well, I love the sense of calm that you always bring to this show. You've got this sense that your heart is at rest. And when I look at the world and all the chaos in it, I'm naturally drawn to people that appear just to be a little bit full of calm and contentment. So you're a great example in that regard.
Well, I'm learning. I don't have the gift of evangelism, but I have it as a high passion.
Mm-hmm.
Consequently, I've had to learn, you know, slowly learn from my mistakes and so on, but I don't want to let my mistakes get me off the rails. The other thing, too, is you mentioned about a world that's got lots of troubles. What could be more relevant in that world than that there is hope in the gospel of Christ? And it seems to me if Christians are quiet, we've engaged in an act of injustice, because we haven't rendered to the hurting world its due, which is the opportunity to trust Christ.
Mm-hmm. I think you're being very humble when you say you don't do evangelism well. It's like saying the doctor that isn't good at medicine.
I'm not saying I haven't learned to do it efficiently.
You have.
I had a wonderful discussion, several wonderful discussions this week with people I had just met, including a limo driver when I was coming back from Washington, D.C. last night. And he was a Muslim, and I was able to share the whole gospel with him in a way that I think gained a hearing. And a few weeks back, 6 weeks ago or so, I shared the gospel with a Muslim limo driver, and he trusted Christ with me on the limousine. I think I can be effective, but I'm only effective because, one, I've kept at it. I've not let the strikeouts keep me. You know, if you're afraid of striking out, don't play baseball.
Mm-hmm.
Never play baseball. You never know the joy of hitting the home run. I haven't let the mistakes that I've made keep me down. I've tried to grow and learn through them. And anybody can do that.
Yeah.
And if you make a mistake, go ask forgiveness of the person you made the mistake with and tell them, I'm so sorry. I would, again, never want to do anything that would keep you from seeing how much you're loved by God.
Jerry, we need to take a break, but when we come back, I would love for all of us to crawl into that cab and hear what you said to that Muslim cab driver. That could be very helpful in the conversation. It's 46 minutes after the hour. We'll take a short break and be right back with Dr. Jerry Root. It's 49 minutes after the hour. Bill Arnold here talking to Dr. Jerry Root, professor of evangelism at Wheaton College and director of the Evangelism Initiative at the Billy Graham Center for Evangelism, and happens to be one of my most favorite guests who comes on the show. I wish we had you on more often, Jerry, but I do want to ask you about that conversation you had with that cab driver who was Muslim and how you engaged him spiritually, because that's of great interest to all of us listeners.
Well, I've had hundreds of conversations with Muslims before, and usually I begin the same way. when they ask what the difference is between Christianity and Islam, I say, well, first off, no Christian believes that God cohabited with a woman for the virgin birth to occur. And you set that aside because many of them have troubles with that, and I say we don't believe that. We believe that Mary was supernaturally, Jesus was supernaturally conceived. So once that's off the board, now we can begin to talk. And I say the big difference between us is that we believe in a God of Trinity. And I ask them three quick questions. One, do you believe God's a contingent being, a caused being, or a non-contingent being, eternal and self-existent? They always say non-contingent. I say Christians believe that too. Do you believe God's a God of love? They say yes. Third question, who's the object of his love? And when they say we are, creation is, or somebody that he has made is, then I say if God needs us to fulfill his nature of love, then he's a contingent being, not a non-contingent being. There's a contradiction in your theology. Relational attributes in a non-contingent being presuppose that relationship is necessary in that being. Once they see that, it's a moment of disequilibrium, and all growth is preceded by a moment of recognizing our present conceptual framework isn't sufficient to handle the data. And then I say to them, you know why that's important to us as Christians, this doctrine of the Trinity? They say, no. And we say, at the core of the universe is a God of love who loves us unconditionally. And while all world religions will try to have a recognition of a divine essence, a moral law that we fail to keep, and that the moral law is an offense to the divine essence, all the other world religions come up with new rituals whereby we could somehow placate the divine essence. The problem with that is if we couldn't keep the first set of moral laws, why will we be able to be sufficient in keeping the rituals? And this one Muslim that I talked with, he said, you know what, I believe in the afterlife, and I don't want to go to hell. I am working hard so that I can go to heaven. And I said, do you believe God's a perfect being? He said, yes. I said, well, the problem is, if God's a perfect being, how can you ever be confident you've done enough to satisfy him? And he said, I'm afraid.
Mm.
And it was from that point that I could segue to this incredible love of God that is given without condition, that God fixes in us what's broken through Christ, and that we can have forgiveness in him. He said, I'm tracking with you. That moves me. And it was after that I invited him to trust Christ right there in the car, and he prayed with me right in the car to express his trust in the forgiveness of God, and he accepted it.
Wow.
And he accepted Christ as Lord of his life, too. Because if we mess up on our own, then it seems to me we probably need some new management. And he was very eager and responsive. And the guy last night also, there was a similar response on his part. He didn't trust Christ. But I said to him, you know, the Quran says that all good Muslims would read the Injil. The Injil are the Gospels, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. So I said, I don't know if you have a copy of the Injil. And he says, I do not. And I said, well, I just happen to have one quarter of it in my valise. Let me give it to you when we get home. And I gave him a copy of the Gospel of John, which he was eager to read because he had never read the Injil and he wants to be a good Muslim. And I said, you compare what Jesus says based on what the Quran says and see what you think. And the door was wide open. It's amazing.
Gary, I did not think, and maybe you can correct me on this, do Muslims believe they can have a personal relationship with God?
Well, I don't even know exactly how to answer that. I haven't read the full Quran. I've read about half of it. So I would defer on that one because you're asking a question beyond my... But many people are not afraid to answer questions they don't know the answers to.
Mm-hmm.
I had it's the old story of the student who was asked, have you ever read War and Peace? And he said, no, but I wrote a book report on it once. I think we always have to avoid that. So I can't answer that question for you. I'm so sorry.
Well, that's okay, because I thought I had heard or read somewhere that they have this desire to sort of placate God, but they don't have any idea what it's like to be in a personal relationship with him. So when you are having conversations with, like, for example, this gentleman about knowing him and his unconditional love, that just sounds like real personal all of a sudden.
Yeah, I think that that's good. The thing is, though, I've met people who thought they were Christians, who thought they couldn't have a personal relationship with God. And even with this Muslim guy, I mentioned him. You know, there's not one kind of Muslim. You've got Sunnis, you've got Shias, you've got divisions within each of those groups, just like we've got many kinds of Christians. If we say they're Christian, we believe that they have trusted that the God who exists made the world. We have fallen, and we need Christ to set us right and reconcile us to him. That's central to Christianity. It's what Lewis wrote about in Mere Christianity. But we recognize that within that, or under that umbrella, there's lots of different stripes. So we shouldn't be surprised that there's a lot of differences even among Muslims and Buddhists and Hindus and so on. So it's always good to talk with the person and find out where he or she happens to be before we sort of overlay maybe some universal understanding of somebody from that group.
Mm-hmm. Jerry, I know there are listeners, maybe even someone in the studio right now, that listens to your explanation and your engagement with this individual, and people might be thinking, this guy is just so smart. I can't compete with that.
I'm not very smart.
All right, let me write that down. I'm not very smart.
I'm trying to grow, and I think that's the key.
Okay.
That all of us are starting from some place. The question is, do we want to stay at that place 10 years from now?
Mm-hmm.
And all of us can grow. And if we're willing to enter into the mission of God in the world, where we can extend his love to others and the message of his love and forgiveness to others, so they could stop wearying themselves with the things that will never ultimately satisfy, and they can turn to Christ and they can discover in Jesus how deeply they're loved and how incredible is his forgiveness.
Mm-hmm.
And that relationship begins to emerge. I think any of us can do that. I don't think it has to do with levels of intelligence. If it did, then children wouldn't be able to trust Christ. The gospel's simple enough that a child can understand it and deep enough that scholars will never exhaust the wonder of it.
Wow.
That means then in telling it, maybe we just have a childlike ability to tell. God uses that. And I've sensed, too, that the Holy Spirit prompts our hearts, and sometimes we have a prompt. I've never heard an audible word from God, but I've sometimes sensed, you should tell this person about Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes you do, and it goes great. Other times it goes horrible. But I realize if God gave me the prompt, then God's got a plan for that person, and I may be number six talking to that person out of 12 that are going to talk to that person before they come to Christ.
Yeah, Jerry.
I respond to the prompts.
Yeah. I just put a gold star on your paper for today. Thank you so much.
You did.
Oh, yeah.
Thank you, sir.
All right. Look forward to speaking to you again. That was Dr. Jerry Root. If you want to access his article, it's on ChristianityToday.com. And it is 57 minutes after the hour. We'll take a short break and be right back to wrap up the big show. Thanks for listening this morning. So glad you're with us.